Because of racial animus, Jacqueline Warner gave the promotion salary increase instead to the white candidate over whom Aisieto had prevailed for modeling team lead. Wagner and Cooper conspired to terminate excellent performer Aisieto and fail and induce Sandapisu to create documentation showing performance deficiency to justify the termination. Pisu falsely accused Aisieto of plagiarism. Cooper continues to harass Aisieto from, "I would not have promoted you to get out of my office, nigger." Fanime asked Aisieto to drop its EEOC charge. He refused. Fanime fired him and claimed in the administrative court that they fired him for gross misconduct connected with work. The district court granted summary judgment before discovery. Genuinely show material fact exists.
May I ask you a question? After Mr. Cooper said this to you, did you tell your employer that you didn't want to be around him at all?
Yes, indeed. One of the first elements I did to the compliance and ethics department is to say, I want to have a buffer between me and this vice president. But they require me to continue to work one-on-one with Cooper behind closed door for 89 days. And as to cause, no. In Ellison v. Brady, the court held that in some cases, the mere presence of an employee who is engaged in particularly severe or pervasive harassment can create a hostile working environment. And the lack of evidence that Fannie Mae exercised reasonable care here to prevent the harassment should lead to the same decision as in Parker v. Warren County Utilities Division, where the court reversed the summary judgment because the employer failed to prove that it exercised reasonable care to prevent the harassment. Also, the district court erred by granting summary judgment before discovery because from Liberty Lobby to Silotex, the U.S. Supreme Court held that summary judgment is appropriate only after the non-moving party has enjoyed adequate time for discovery. Federal court hold that a decision for summary judgment before discovery has been completed must be viewed as precipitous. No discovery period was set by the court. Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 26D provides a party may not seek discovery from any source before the party have conferred as required by 26F. The district court hasn't yet held the discovery conference. Discovery can neither start nor be completed. Summary judgment was premature. Also, the district court erred by not ordering a more definite statement before modifying the basis of the count in count one to racial discrimination based on denial of salary increase. The records show that count one is rather based on inverted salary increase, the promotion salary increase given instead to the white candidate over whom Aisieto has prevailed. To modify the basis of the claim, the district court must order a more definite statement pointing out the defect complained of and the detailed desire, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 12E. No such order was issued here. In violation of Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 56E, which require that affidavit shall be made on personal knowledge, Fannie Mae prepared inadmissible affidavit for Wagner and Cooper. Defendants don't have non-discriminatory reason for their action. The district court here granted summary judgment based on factual and legally error. The district court believed that the evidence cited by plaintiff is insufficient to establish pretext, given the undisputed fact that plaintiff failed to address was factually and legally erroneous. Factually erroneous. Facts relied upon are all disputed. Legally erroneous. Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 56 prescribed that considering some fact on dispute does not of itself allow summary judgment. And defendant reasons were proffered more than 7 months after the fact during the Fleet Frank investigation. In Santiago Ramos v. Centennial Wireless Corporation, the court held that pretext is established where non-discriminatory reasons were after-the-fact justification provided subsequent to the beginning of a legal action. Employers do not usually deny the promotion salary increase to the winner of the promotion while giving the salary increase instead to the loser. By concluding that Aisieto was treated differently, the district court should find discrimination, as the U.S. Supreme Court held in International Brotherhood of Steamsters v. U.S. Discriminatory motive can be inferred from a mere fact of differences in treatment. The fact and the law do not support the district court finding on the defamation claim. The district court was duped. Fannie Mae exhibit GA 157. It is not the edit 12 of the word document and dispute standard of input, GA 159. The in-camera review of technology specialist David Terlong concluded that PSU fabricated the one-page document. The Fleet Frank investigation found that PSU accused Aisieto of plagiarism without properly vetting this contention. It was not accurate. The law do not support the finding. I used to say 27-page document is intimate. Pesu 1-page document has never been intimate. On the Rule 56, the inference is that Pesu fabricated the document because the court must view the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. Whether Pesu fabricated the 1-page document is a fact question for the jury. In the first claim, genuine issue of material fact exists as to whether the salary of the selected team leads are false, as to whether Wagner action and epithet were emanation of racial animus, as to whether the compensation department advised Wagner against raising Aïssieto's salary, as to whether material Julie Clay, Navin Fernandez, and Aïssieto were similarly situated, as to whether the material lies by Wagner and Harris is a typo. But Wagner said, for a young black man smart like you, in Ash v. Tazenfoot, the U.S. Supreme Court held such references to not only be racially offensive, but also indicative of discrimination. Whether employees are similarly situated is a fact question for the jury. George v. Levy, in making finding on these issues, the district court usurped the jury function. A trial judge cannot encroach on the jury fact-finding function. Tri-County Industry v. District of Columbia. The district court failed to apply a totality of circumstances to your hostile work environment. The district court ignored the majority of elements, including work sabotage, Wagner hostile work environment, Pesu disparate treatment, Cooper continuous harassment, by limiting count to three to only Cooper use of the racial epithet nigger. The district court applied an isolated incident instead of the totality of circumstances required by the U.S. Supreme Court, Harris v. Forkley. The district court failed to apply the severe or pervasive test Aïssieto anxiety disorder treatment, and finding a firing of Vice President Cooper for violating non-discrimination and harassment policies show severity. Cooper harassment interfered with Aïssieto work performance. By focusing solely on the frequency, the district court failed to apply a totality of circumstances. Fannie Mae is strictly liable. It was harassment by superior. Genuine issue of material fact exists as to whether Fannie Mae took prompt action to stop Cooper harassment. Instead of 30-day resolution, Fannie Mae required Aïssieto to continue to work one-on-one with Cooper for 30 days.
Ito, do you want to reserve some time? There's only about 2 minutes left. Do you want to save some time to rebut after they're finished? If you step down now, you'll be able to save some time to come back.
Just one point. On the termination, based on the U.S. Supreme Court decision, Stokes v. Proctor Hospital, under the cat paws theory, Aïssieto termination was unlawful because the October 2009 termination relies on, and it is the completion of the September 2008 failed attempt by racially motivating Wagner and Cooper to terminate Aïssieto for prevailing over a white candidate. Wagner and Cooper induced Pesu to carry out their discriminatory purpose by ordering Pesu to create documentation with deficiency to justify the termination. Their racial bias worked his way into the final firing decision. Animus and responsibility for the termination can both be attributed to Wagner and Cooper. Pesu alleged dissatisfaction does not prevent this earlier agent discriminatory animus from being the proximate cause of the termination. Fannie Mae firing reasons are false. It is undisputed that some of Aïssieto's performance evaluations were falsified. Their reasons are inconsistent in changing. Poor performance, then misconduct connected with work, and now performance and attitude. First, at summary judgment, changing rationale is sure pretext, Dominguez Cruz v. Sotel Caribe. Second, judiciary estoppel bars Fannie Mae from moving away from gross misconduct connected with work. And in conclusion, genuine issue of material fact exists. Defendant argued that they didn't know about the EEOC complaint, but Aïssieto told Pesu and the HR department about it. The U.S. District Court itself find that this creates a disputed issue of fact that cannot be resolved on summary judgment. That's their word. Summary judgment was clearly an error. Procedural error are ground for reversal, and defendants failed to prove the absence of genuine issue of material fact. They are not entitled to summary judgment. The essence of Rule 56 is that where the evidentiary matter in support of the motion does not establish the absence of a genuine issue of fact, summary judgment must be denied, even if no opposing evidentiary matter is presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll hear from counsel for Fannie Mae, Mr. Stewart.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Damian Stewart. I'm an employee and counsel for Fannie Mae in this matter. Mr. Aïssieto has raised claims under Section 1981 for the denial of a salary increase, a hostile work environment, and discriminatory termination, as well as a state law claim for defamation. In the last 3 years, we've litigated with Mr. Aïssieto in several forms. The first was an arbitration before retired Judge Richard Levy of the Superior Court.
That's really irrelevant to us at this point. So what about the summary judgment granted here on these matters?
Certainly. So let's talk about the denial of salary increase. Mr. Isiotto claims that the salary increase was given instead to a white employee, Carla Kusakova. And he alleges that there was a statement made by Jackie Wagner, who was the former chief audit executive.
And we have to assume that's correct for purposes of this argument, correct?
Right. That's right. That's right. But the fact of the matter is what the district court did is look at the evidence and determine whether or not there was any inference of discrimination.
Why would you look at an inference? You have direct evidence. You have a statement by Mr. Wagner that, quote, "For a young black man smart like you, I think I'm already paying you a lot of money." Why couldn't a reasonable jury conclude from that that because he's black that he didn't get the raise?
Well, I think to determine whether or not that statement was direct evidence, the issue is that the statement occurred approximately 3.5 months after the decision was actually made.
Why can't that be an explanation? If I don't give you a raise and then 3 months later I say the reason I'm not giving you a raise is because I didn't give you a raise is because of your race, why isn't that sufficient? Why does it have to come before?
Well, I think what she said, if assuming the statement was made, which Ms. Wagner disagreed with, or disputed, but assuming that the statement was made, what she said was that he should be smart. He should accept the salary that he was given, and that as a young black man,
part because of his race, though, right? And it could be read as being in part because of your race, in part because of your age. You should be happy with what you're getting. And why can't a jury assess that statement in combination with the fact that he didn't get the raise that everyone else got, and the person he beat, Kusakura, did get the raise? I mean, it seems like you put all that together, that's surely enough to get to a jury, isn't it?
Well, that's right. But the issue is not that's not enough to get to the jury. I think what the issue is, you'd have to put all of those factors together. That statement alone doesn't constitute direct evidence of discrimination.
Well, you put the statement, we haven't even gotten to the Cooper statement, which is different, but this statement plus the fact that the person he beat out got the raise and he didn't, put those things together, it seems like that's enough. We don't usually, rarely does a case get here with the direct evidence of the kind we have in this case. I'll just say that. So I realize summary judgment's granted a lot in these cases, but it's usually cases without the direct evidence we have here. This seems to me hard to keep this kind of evidence from a jury.
I disagree that
statement may not get you all the way there, but it sure gets you a long way there, doesn't it?
I disagree that this is actually direct evidence because she was not saying that I denied you a salary increase because you were black. You would have to infer that, in which the district court.
That's what juries do.
Direct evidence doesn't mean you can't get there by inference. Right. Direct evidence is a statement from which a reasonable jury could conclude. Are you saying no reasonable jury could read this? That's the test, right? No reasonable jury. That's the test of, as Mr. Ito said, whether there's a genuine issue of material fact. No reasonable juror could read this as being an explanation that you didn't get the raise because you're black.
In light of the evidence in light of what Ms. Wagner's actual actions were, in fact, there were 16 applications for the team lead positions. Six of the 12 applicants for team leads were African American who received those team leads. And when you look at the salaries, the highest paid person was a Hispanic woman, Maribel Garrido Pagan. The next two highest salaries were two African Americans, Tafari Hattis from Ethiopia, Demetria Page, U.S. born. In fact, the white applicants for the team lead positions, their salaries were far below those of the African Americans. Mr. Isiotto, his salary was $98,000. Julie Clay, the white applicant for a team lead position, even after she got the increase, she was $6,000 less than him.
Sorry to interrupt. Those are the kinds of arguments that we usually think are strong arguments when you just would have the maybe difference in salary payment. But when you add on top the statement from Wagner, which again we have to accept is true, it seems to me it's an entirely different kind of case, and that kind of case has to go to a jury, doesn't it?
I don't think so, because again, you do have to take the inference and look at the totality of the circumstances here, which is what the district court did. It looked to the evidence of what Ms. Wagner's actions were. In fact, Ms. Wagner initially proposed a salary increase for Mr. Isiotto. It wasn't until there was a recommendation from the compensation department not to give him a salary increase, and what's crucial there is that the director of the compensation department was Nicole Harris, who herself is African American. Ms. Wagner would have given him a salary increase but for the recommendation from the compensation department. So to the extent there is any question of whether there was any discrimination at issue, the inference has to be belied by the fact that it was compensation's recommendation to Ms. Wagner not to give him a salary increase.
Was that Ms. Wagner's testimony?
That is in her affidavit, yes.
But the jury doesn't have to believe that.
There is no dispute.
The dispute is an inference from this statement to the contrary. I mean, obviously, if the jury believed that, that might make a difference. But the contrary evidence is this statement from which a jury could infer that this was her true reason.
Well, again, the statement itself is not so concise that I denied you a salary increase because you were black. It was more you should be happy with the salary that you received.
Because you're black.
Yeah.
It's not exactly what she said. But I understand that, yeah.
Can I ask about the hostile work environment?
Certainly.
Claim? Mm-hmm. Seems to me I have a similar reaction to that, which is when you have the kind of statement that Cooper said, that statement alone is a hostile work environment.
I don't think so.
I realize very few isolated statements under the Supreme Court precedent get you to a jury on a hostile work environment claim, but it's a balance. Justice O'Connor's opinion in Harris, and it strikes me that just looking at this and looking at the other facts, that's got to go to a jury too, doesn't it?
I don't think so. There's a very demanding standard of what constitutes a hostile work environment. It's a very
flexible standard. You can say it demanding, but keep going. Sorry.
And it doesn't involve just counting numbers, right? I mean, the district court seemed to be...
I didn't hear what you said.
It doesn't involve just counting numbers of instances, does it, right? I mean, the examples that the district court gave are all... seems like she was counting numbers and saying, you're not going to get one on a single act. But that's not the right standard, is it?
No,
there can be a single act that creates a hostile environment.
I think it's possible for there to be a single act.
And so why isn't that... here.
It has to be sufficiently severe to alter the conditions of someone.
And immediate reaction,
exactly.
As alleged, immediate reaction and immediate complaints, some health-related issues.
So in fact, Fannie Mae had an immediate reaction, didn't they? I mean, seeing what took place, they immediately launched an investigation. Doesn't that suggest that they recognized that this was a sufficiently serious matter?
The investigation started after Mr. Isiotto's complaint about his performance evaluation from March. Okay, this incident happened a little bit later in March, right? Admittedly. Fannie Mae hired an outside law firm, well-respected law firm, to conduct that investigation. The appropriate admonitions
were
given.
That Cooper likely did say what was alleged.
They made a credibility determination that Cooper said whatever the statement was. They acknowledged that Cooper disputed that the statement was made.
But in the meantime, he has to work with Mr. Cooper on a daily basis, doesn't he? After Mr. Cooper has hurled this racial epithet.
Mr. Cooper was his second-level supervisor, not his direct supervisor. Didn't have to work with him on a daily basis.
He could avoid him?
Excuse me?
Mr. Ito could avoid him? He could avoid Mr. Cooper? He didn't have to work with him?
They didn't work in the same office. And there's been no allegation in either of any of his complaint or his amended complaint that there was any further action, discriminatory or harassing action, directed from Mr. Cooper to Mr. Isiotto. Fannie Mae's responsibility and duty is to stop whatever alleged harassment is and make sure that there is no continuation of any harassment. Fannie Mae did that. The appropriate admonitions were given. There's no allegation that Mr. Isiotto suffered any further harassment. He never was not accused, not no other
names were
called.
Some of the cases of isolated statements are statements that could be read one way or another. I mean, that's not this case. This case seems to me it's obvious on its face. It's creating a hostile environment in common parlance, and certainly under the Supreme Court's test, it seems like the kind of thing that creates a severe environment.
Not according to
the judgment call for us, obviously, and I agree there's no rule book that's going to tell us exactly what words get you automatically to a jury, but it seemed that what's alleged here, if anything gets you automatically to a jury, this would be it, the statement alleged to have been said by Cooper.
I don't think the cases, particularly the ones that we cited in our brief, would support that, but...
Well, let me ask him what seems even clearer than the other two to me, which has to do with retaliatory discharge.
Sure.
So he says that Ms. Passut told him that she had been given the go-ahead to fire him if he didn't drop his claim against Fannie Mae. And then he was fired. Why is that not direct evidence of retaliatory discharge? How much stronger could it be than, if you don't drop your complaint, you will be fired, and then the person's fired?
Again, the issue is whether the Fannie Mae did have a legitimate non-retaliatory reason to terminate him.
Why is that relevant? If now you're arguing a multi-factor argument, which I don't believe was raised at all in the summary judgment situation. That goes to what the degree of remedy might be later, but it doesn't go to the question of whether or not he has enough to get to the jury on retaliation.
Well, again, so here we have a statement where the issue with many of these statements that your honors have pointed out, of these all occur in a one-on-one fashion where Mr. Isiotto and the Fannie Mae person involved.
So you're saying they might not be true, but right. For purposes of this case, we have to assume they are true. And as he points out, for purposes of summary judgment, the judge in the district court has to assume they're true. Isn't that right? You have to assume it's true.
That is true.
So if it's true that you were told, if you don't drop your complaint, you will be fired, and then you were fired, are you saying no reasonable jury could conclude that the reason you were fired was because you didn't drop your complaint?
Again, we have no evidence other than Mr. Isiotto's self-serving statement that that conversation occurred.
You understand again. That goes to credibility.
Good enough. I realize what's different about this case from a lot of our precedents is we don't have, even from the complaining party, statements that are this direct, that use the racial epithet, that allege the racial epithets that were used against him. And that's what seems to distinguish that. And as Judge Garland's saying on the retaliation, a direct statement like that. And if you have those kinds of allegations, that's jury material, I would think. Because what you're saying here is you're suggesting maybe what he's alleging is not true. Well, that's something we can't handle at this point in the proceedings. That can only be determined at trial. So maybe that's more a comment than a question.
Anybody else? Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sir, does he have any time left? You have 30 seconds left. You're welcome to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor. The major point is that the compensation department did not advise Wagner against raising his sister's salary. No evidence suggests that. In fact, it's the contrary. The second point is that the investigation did, in fact, start after Mr. Cooper called me the derogatory name. Is the CEO, after hearing about the racial slur, who actually asked the Fritz Frank investigation to step in. So the other point to make here is that the salary that they present here, false. Nine of the team lead told me the salary. That's not what we're seeing on the paper. And if you notice, it's an Excel sheet that they're giving people to add those numbers. But the main point is that I clearly told Fannie Mae several times that the environment was hostile. And the CEO itself received a letter on the 25th to say that I'm still under this harassment of the Mr. Cooper. Please solve this issue. That letter is in one of the things. So they had all the effort. They didn't act promptly. They didn't want to. That's all.
Okay, thank you. We'll take the case under submission. And we have a grand jury matter, so we'll close the courtroom and come back after the courtroom's closed.